At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Only a Mormon could think it was like a good idea to live eternally with one man. Like, please, you know, love my husband. Gosh. Eternity.
Well, well, well. Welcome to Please Bless This Podcast, the podcast where two sisters talk about all things Mormon and pop culture. And sometimes. Stephanie Meyer's Twilight Saga.
You've reminded me that right off the bat, we need to comment. The soundtracks for these movies are some of the greatest movie soundtracks of all time.
Whoever did the music for these films, like, could not have possibly been paid enough. It was
perfection.
The backbone.
Perfection.
Yeah.
Like, so for this episode, we watched Twilight and New Moon. Great soundtracks. I think New Moon is number one.
Yeah.
It's my number one.
Me too.
I could listen to it start to finish, no skips, every day of my life.
Obviously.
If it's not clear, we are approaching the Twilight Saga as true fans.
Yes. This is, we are not dragging anybody through the mud. I mean, we'll lightly drag Stephanie Meyer through the mud.
Oh, unfortunately, yes.
She's a silly person, but
she brings the Mormonness strong.
Yes. Yeah. Which is why we're covering it. Some of you may not know, Stephanie Meyer is Mormon, very much Mormon. Turns out a super Mormon, like a conservative Mormon.
Yeah. It was interesting to read interviews with her. I've never really dug into kind of her persona and her career and her thoughts and feelings about Twilight. I've just been like a Twilight purist. I've read the books over and over, seen the movies over and over. But she has some things to say.
She sure does. And it's surprising. You think, I don't know, she's an author of this like incredible saga. She had this movie deal right out of the gate. You just kind of expect a little bit more, like her to be a little bit more like literary or like a little bit more worldly or something. Sure. But she's just like, yeah, I like Shakespeare and Jane Austen and the Book of Mormon, baby.
Yes. It seems like she truly kind of stumbled into this life and this fame in a way that I think is pretty unusual. And it does not seem to have changed her one bit from like true, pure, innocent Mormon, which, you know, to some extent, great, don't let fame change you. To another extent, it's like pretty amazing to like have this level of wealth and fame and exposure and still think in such an insular way.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, good on her.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. Tight.
We are. My name's Katie.
That's Katie. I'm Elisa. Yo. We're big Twilight fans here. Going back to what I said before about no hate, we love these texts. We also will not stand for any hate for Ms. Kristen Stewart and Mr. Robert Pattinson.
Absolutely not.
I could talk for days about how those two are the greatest actors of their generation.
Yes.
And if you scoff at that, I will ask you, have you seen Personal Shopper? Have you seen The Clouds of Sils Maria? Have you seen Good Time?
Have you seen Good Time?
Get yourself to the movies because these two are doing great work.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of that great work is in Twilight.
Yes. Yes. And like, I feel like there is a lot of hate for them in these roles, but they're playing the characters they've been given, and those characters are cringe.
Yes, they're cringe characters. They are
playing them with all their hearts.
Played beautifully. Robert Pattinson is Edward Cullen.
Yep. He hates himself for being Edward Cullen, just as Edward Cullen hates himself for being Edward Cullen.
Yes.
It is meta perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And Kristen Stewart, yeah, she's awkward. She's, you know, stuttering her face off. She has no sense of identity beyond her love for this man she's known for mere weeks. And that is Bella, my friends. Like, get it together. Get your eyes checked. These two are incredible.
They're doing a great job. Now, that's not to say that there isn't some pretty terrible acting in these films.
No one's saying that.
But it's not coming from Case doing our pats.
No, please. Don't even come with that. We will block you.
No. Just turn off this episode right now.
I know. We don't want you to hear it. There's no room for discourse around that. However, yeah, there's some pretty bad acting, but that only adds to the beauty and camp of these films. Mm-hmm.
They are quite camp.
Like Taylor Lautner, what a sweetheart.
Yeah.
We were talking right before this episode started about, like, I'm sure he has many talents.
Mm-hmm.
Acting, however, is perhaps not one of them.
It sure isn't. No. Beautiful man. Beautiful, beautiful flesh puppet. seems like a nice, nice person.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. He brings the cringe. He brings the camp.
And I was saying that for me, that made the Team Edward, Team Jacob debate even easier. Mm-hmm. Like reading the books, I was always Team Edward. Watching the movies, I was like, it's not even a question. Like this man is over here acting his life, you know, acting his heart out.
Mm-hmm.
He's even using like a terrible American accent to try and sound like he's outside of his own time, as a vampire would, mind you.
I am not sure if that's what he's doing. I think it's that he refuses a dialect coach. And this is no slander to Robert Pattinson, but I have heard that he refuses dialect coaching.
That's fine.
So that's just him doing the one American accent he knows.
Katie, I disagree. Again, I need to point you to some other Robert Pattinson films, but...
Well, sure. I mean, he lays on the accent thick in, like, Good Time and whatever, yeah. But...
And he does talk about... I've read an interview with him where he talks about, like, intentionally choosing an American dialect that was kind of old-timey. Mm. Whether or not it works in every moment, we could quibble about.
No.
But listen, this man is an artist.
Yeah, he's an artist. Listen, I don't give a shit about his bad American accent. It's fine. But honestly, sometimes it's so bad, I think it rubs off on Kristen Stewart. Because sometimes she will be stumbling through her lines, too. And I'm like, it's because he's doing it so poorly that she's starting to fumble. Anyway, no hate.
None. Like the deepest respect of my life.
Don't even think about it. Yeah. Oh, but I was going to say, you were talking about how the Edward versus Jacob debate is no debate in your mind. And I have to like give you a hard disagree for so many reasons that are just like very specific to me, very specific to me being like 16 years old when this book came out. My first boyfriend that I was dating when Twilight came out was very much an Edward Cullen. So Natch, when me and my first boyfriend broke up, I became Team Jacob. And also just like growing up is also being like, wow, he's super hot and has muscles kind of thing. But obviously Team Edward.
Yeah, is obviously. Correct. It's just not even close in my head. Like Jacob was never really even a viable option.
I mean, I was watching New Moon with my husband yesterday and I turned over to him and I said, you know, this is a little unrealistic. And this is not like a very feminist thing for me to say, but this is just coming from my own life experience as a woman. I think Bella would have folded and started dating Jacob within like 3 months.
Mm.
Like he is very hot, human. Like,
he's into her.
Pulse. He's very into her.
Look, I don't disagree with you, except that my little like teenage Mormon soul understood what it meant to fall in love with someone and never let it go. Like love was forever.
Love is forever.
And yeah. Edward just got there first, and that was it. Let's talk a little bit about this Mormon stuff. Stephenie Meyer. Let's back up to Stephenie Meyer, which will inevitably lead us into talking more about Mormonism and Twilight. So, okay, some juicy little tidbits we learned about Stephenie Meyer in doing research for this episode. She cites the Book of Mormon. Sorry, I can't even get the fact out without laughing, as the book that has had the most significant impact on her life. This is a woman who studied literature in college. In other interviews, she talks about how she was reading like 5 or 6 books a week when her kids were young, and she would be like holding them with one hand and holding a book with the other. She's someone who has read a lot and loves to read. And the Book of Mormon is number one.
All I hear when I hear that is that she knows that that's the answer she should give. Mm-hmm. She feels for whatever reason that that's the answer she's supposed to give. When at the same time, to me, it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, sure. Like, yeah, it's the basis of your religion. Sure. That's not what they're asking.
That's such a different question, though, right? Like, yeah. I'm trying to inhabit the mind of true believing Mormon Lisa back in the day. Mm-hmm. And if I were asked, what is the most significant book in your life? I just can't imagine I would have said the Book of Mormon.
No, unless you didn't read.
Yes. Yeah. Unless you'd never read anything else. It's just such a fascinating response. So that shows a certain level of like devoutness and also a kind of like adherence to a certain image of Mormonism that she is like, this is going to be my public persona. I'm going to be the hardcore Mormon lady.
Right. She really dug her heels in. I think that Stephenie Meyer was raised like a little bit like super mega extra orthodox Mormon. From what I read, you know, being like kind of an Arizona really conservative Mormon, you know, they didn't like, she mentions she didn't really listen to music growing up. She didn't start getting into music until she was an adult. I assume just meaning like secular music. I'm sure they listened to classical or Mormon music, but that's interesting. You know,
that is interesting. It's also interesting because she talks a lot about the musical inspirations for her writing, and it's like Linkin Park and Muse, which are like a little edgy for someone who claims this level of orthodoxy.
For sure.
It's also interesting because she says even as an adult, she's never watched an R-rated movie.
I'll never understand.
And that's pretty intense. I mean, I was not watching R-rated movies as a kid. And our parents mostly weren't, though they would watch some. But in adulthood, I mean, come on. Like, you're not going to even watch, I don't know, what's like a benign rated R movie? They're all
like a war movie or, you know, like.
Yeah. Isn't Lady Bird rated R? Am I making that up? No. I mean, like, there are just so many, like, lovely kind of innocent movies out there that are rated R. Yeah. You've never seen one?
And for what? Like, are you that afraid of, like, hearing the F word?
Yeah.
You can't stomach the F word?
It made me think about being, so I got my master's degree at BYU, and I was in the English department, same department as good old Stephenie Meyer got her undergrad degree. And I knew people who were like, oh, I want to write my, you know, master's thesis in film. And I'm looking at this like set of films or whatever. And but I don't watch rated R movies. And I remember hearing even faculty at BYU be like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't think it was like super openly, like it wasn't a requirement or anything, but it was just sort of like, come on, if you're going to pretend to be a scholar of film, you have to watch films.
But at the end of the day, I mean, when you take her out of the context of like being this author and producing some of her movies, I mean, we know people who don't even watch PG-13 movies.
It's true, we do.
That's not out of the question.
The Clean Flicks Mormons.
The Clean Flicks Mormons.
Clean Flicks, for folks who don't know, is a company in Utah, and their business model is they remove, you know, questionable quote unquote things from movies and then distribute them to Mormons. So I remember, again, being a student at BYU, this was as I was an undergrad and I was taking a Shakespeare class. And as a class, we watched Shakespeare in Love.
Ooh.
But it was the Queen Flix version. Mm. And it was significantly shorter.
Yeah.
I mean, years later, I watched the regular one and was like, whoa, this makes a lot more sense.
That's
the
funny.
The stakes of this relationship were not maybe fully clear to me.
That's yeah. funny. I think I watched that in high school, but I'm sure my parents had to sign a
yeah.
consent form.
Yeah. I mean, like, even in middle school or high school, I remember a history class where we watched Schindler's List and we had to get permission from our parents. But, like, of course, we got permission.
Right.
I mean, never having seen a single rated R movie is pretty extreme.
Yes.
It also, I think, is interesting. In an interview, she talked about how she hasn't engaged with a lot of, like, vampire-centric media. Like, they asked her if she's read Dracula, and she said no.
That's crazy.
They asked her if she's watched Interview with a Vampire, and she was like, oh, I've seen some scenes on TV, which means edited. And she was like, ooh, yuck.
Oh, that's the other thing. In interviews, she gives off very much that kind of vibe. They're like, ew, yuck.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, she's very like, no, this is my image. Yeah. You know?
This is my box and I'm not looking beyond it.
It's not.
I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. In that same vein, there's an interview where she's asked about 50 Shades of Grey, which we all know started out as Twilight fan fiction.
Yes.
Just iconic.
Yes.
And an interviewer asked Meyer what she thinks of 50 Shades of Grey, and she quickly emphatically says no, she's never read it. She doesn't wish James ill at all, E.L. James, the author of 50 Shades of Grey. She says, but it's so not my genre. Erotica is not something I read. I don't even read traditional romance. Why not? It's too smutty. There's a reason my books have a lot of innocence. That's sort of the world I live in.
Listen, Twilight is smut. Twilight is smut without the sex. Okay. It goes like, there's so much, like, I want you so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants me so bad. And I want him so bad. It's
yes!
so overt.
It's
sexual.
So over the top. Katie, I was writing down lines from the scene in Twilight when they're in the woods and he's like, say it out loud. And she's yeah. like, you're a vampire. So he's like, I hated you for making me want you so badly. I don't know if I can control myself. And then she like steps closer to him and like pushes her body against his. And she's like, I know you can.
Yeah.
There's this like, you want me so badly. And mm-hmm. like, we're going to like push that limit as far as we can and
yeah.
see how much we can resist.
Right. And it being about him wanting to suck her blood is like, that much more sexual.
Yeah, like literally devour her.
Right, because it's like sex we can like reconcile, like, oh, he wants to have sex with her, like, okay,
yeah.
okay, that's something we all do. He wants to like brutally
yeah.
like murder and drink all of her blood.
Yeah,
like that's whew, that's
when
that's
he
steamy.
Says you're my own personal brand of heroin. Oh, number God. One, terrible line.
Yeah.
Number two, ridiculous line, especially coming from a woman who's like, innocence is the world I live in.
Right.
Like, then maybe you don't write about like people's heroin addictions. Like, it just comes off a little false and a little strange. It makes me think of that episode of The Office where Pam is like, oh, I love this. It's like crack. And Ryan's like, I love when people who've never had crack talk about crack. And she's like, what should I call it, Ryan? And they just kind of bicker about it.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm Ryan when I yeah. hear that line.
But you're
like,
right. Oh. Yeah.
I'm Ryan, except that I'm right. One thing that was interesting to me, I saw a couple of news outlets quoting Robert Pattinson saying, yeah, I've seen people making claims about how this is like a Mormon text or a Mormon allegory. And he's like, even Stephanie Meyer says that's not true.
Yeah.
So we did find a lot of think pieces that are like, here's my Mormon reading of Twilight.
Right.
And some of them are pretty, I think, well argued. And some of them are really over the top.
Bananas.
Kind of nuts. But there's just a lot of them out there. And Robert Pattinson is like, no. Stephanie Meyer says it's not about that. Mm-hmm. And I would argue it is inevitably about Mormonism simply because of how Stephanie Meyer's entire worldview is founded in Mormonism by her own admission, right? Mm-hmm. Like she lives in a very particular box. Mm-hmm. And so it just inevitably like informs the story and the characters and the themes.
Right. The woman who says her most influential book is the Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to be heavily influenced by it in everything she does,
yeah.
Even if she doesn't mean to. Like, I don't think that it's an allegory for Mormonism or for the Book of Mormon, but I mean, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. This is my first time. We talked about this before the episode started. This is our first time watching it with like a Mormon lens. Like, let me see if I can notice Mormon stuff happening, mm-hmm. and it's there for sure. Do I think Stephanie Meyer set out to write a Mormon allegory? You know, some people have argued like Bella is like converting to the truth
mm-hmm.
by becoming a vampire, or like the Cullens are like these, the celestial beings, and it's about like becoming exalted or whatever. There's another person who wrote about how like the meadow scenes in all of the Twilight books, because there are all these meadow conflicts, are a response to like criticism of the church for the Mountain Meadows massacre. Do I think any of that is real? No. Do I think Stephanie Meyer intended to write in any of that? No. But is this book Mormon? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Do I think Stephanie Meyer thought of the Mountain Meadows Massacre once while writing the books? No.
No. No, I don't think so.
She didn't consider it. No.
Oh, one other thing we forgot to mention about Stephanie Meyer, which is so crucial. She had a dream that inspired Twilight. She was just like, so a little background about her. She grew up Mormon, like Katie said, in Arizona. Went to BYU, studied English literature, got married while an undergrad, and started having kids pretty much immediately. Has a bunch of young kids, is a stay-at-home mom raising these kids, reading lots of books, but just being a mom, and like that's what she wanted to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one night she has a dream, and it's the meadow scene in Twilight where Bella and Edward are in the meadow and they're talking about like how complicated their relationship is because he wants to kill her. But they're also like in love. And she wakes up the next day and is like, huh. And maybe talks about it with some people, decides to write it.
Mm-hmm.
Writes the novel in 3 months.
Crazy.
And it becomes Twilight. And is like you said, immediately successful. When she sold Twilight, she sold it as a 3-book deal.
Mm-hmm.
And made like $750,000 in an advance. I feel like that is unusual.
Yeah, it's kind of a miracle.
And like movie options were already on the mm-hmm. table before these books even existed. That's the power of that first novel, right?
Yeah.
There was just something about it. I'm going to say, if I'm Stephanie Meyer and I'm a true believing Mormon and I'm as hardcore a Mormon as she is, I think that was revelation.
Right. She was having a vision.
Because she's like, whoa, I had this dream. It turned into this book. And this book has made me like wealth beyond my wildest dreams. Has completely changed my life. Bless my family. I'm thinking that's revelation.
For sure.
Okay. So what do we notice in Twilight that's Mormon?
Oh my gosh. Well, I immediately go into it having a silly goose time and just, interpreting everything in a completely made up Mormon way. So mm-hmm. obviously I first noted that Bella is coming from Arizona. She moves from Arizona to Forks, Arizona being where Miss Stephanie Meyer is from, a nice conservative Mormon Mecca. So I think Bella is the super Mormon. Bella sure. is, coming to Forks being like, oh wow,
What is this Nirvana music? And then just some observations. Bella gets to Forks and, you know, she's moving in with Charlie, her super smoking hot dad. I'm so sorry. And immediately, oh, Bella's mom had to leave Charlie because he drank too much Rainier and was not her spiritual equal. And she had to leave in order to find that right man, but smoking hot nonetheless.
Also, her parents got married really young, which is very Mormon, right?
It is. The way Bella dresses, are you kidding me? Oh, I also wore this in honor of Bella Swan.
Yeah, you look Bella. She literally wore that outfit in New Moon when she went to the Volturi, Katie.
Yes,
it's like her exact costume.
This is it.
I will say too that Katie went through a real Bella Swan phase where you were like being like stopped on the street and people were like, has anyone ever told you you look like Bella Swan?
And I'm like, no. Maybe if I can find some pictures, but yeah, 17-year-old me.
It was
the long dark hair, the look, the vibe.
The angular nose.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. No offense, but it's statuesque.
Wow. Now I'm going to be, what are you thinking about that? Okay. So yeah, the way she dresses, she does a lot of layering. She does a lot of like cap sleeve t-shirt, long sleeve underneath, crew neck.
There's a lot of coverage.
She's very modest.
She wears pants under her prom dress, folks.
She wears pants under her prom dress. She wears a shrug. It's always a shrug. Alice buys her, maybe this one's a New Moon. This is a New Moon. Alice buys her a dress for her birthday. And she has to wear a little shrug over it. It's like, it's me. Let's see. Oh, Edward is so chaste. Mm-hmm. He's so chaste. He is like, I'm so sorry. He's so horny for this girl. He's like, I have to get away.
The first scene when they kiss and then he like, throws himself back.
Ridiculous.
It's so dramatic.
Yeah.
But also, like, didn't you kind of experience that?
100%. What is it with Mormon guys and being like,
I can't,
or like,
especially when
so
you're
guilty.
Younger. Yeah.
It's like, well, I don't like what for kissing.
And
like
you're
relax.
Making this really weird dude, like chill out.
And they would kind of make it out. And this is like, I was pretty young when I was experiencing this. I remember they would like kind of like infantilize me, like they needed to like protect me from them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're weird. Like that's a major red flag. You know?
That is so Mormon. I'm seeing in your notes, Carlisle Cullen is the stake president.
100%.
He's young, he's rich, the people love him, the people listen to him.
He's the doctor.
He's an authority.
Like when Bella almost gets hit by the car and Edward saves her and she goes to the hospital and Carlisle Cullen busts through the doors, immediately I was like, stake president.
Yeah.
Like he is so powerful and just like blonde.
Uh-huh.
He's a prototype. Charlie is so hot, I'm sick. Robert Pattinson could really use a dialect coach. Yeah. So those are my observations on Twilight. That's that on that. Oh, I also literally wrote out ha, 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 ha. So
iconic. I woke up with that tune in my head this morning. What a film. I will say Martyrdom as like a Mormon through line.
For sure.
Shows up from the jump, like
the
very
line.
First lines of the book and the movie are like, I've never given any thought to how I would die. Am I quoting this perfectly?
Yes.
You know, and then she's basically like, to die in the place of someone I love, like what could be better?
And like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know,
Is an insane thing for a teenage girl to say about a boy she literally has known for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Who is also already dead.
Right.
Who is also like has lived over 100 years and you think like you should die for him.
Yeah.
But this is a very Stephenie Meyer idea. So we found an interview where she's talking to a reporter with The Guardian. And she says, true love is that you would hurt yourself before you would hurt your partner. You would do anything to make them happy, even at your own expense. And I just wrote, no, honey, that's codependency.
No, 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 no.
There was another interview I saw where she was like saying to the interviewer, well, you know how you wake up most mornings and you think like, oh, I'm ugly. Ugh, I hate myself, you know? And the interviewer's like, what? So there is a kind of Bella in her.
Yeah, it's for like, sure.
I'm nothing.
Yeah, it's giving like how I felt when I was dating my boyfriend at 16.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not normal, like, yeah, adult behavior.
Yes. So that martyrdom is strong on Bella's mm-hmm. side, but also on Edward's side. Like, he's all about the self-sacrifice. The whole plot of New Moon is driven by his martyr complex. Because he's like, I can't let her get hurt, so I must go away at my... even though I'm suffering. And I was texting you, Katie. I was like, is New Moon about Edward going on a mission? Low
and
key.
And it is.
Because he goes to Brazil.
Perfect. Which the colon's in Brazil.
Yeah. Which is where like 70% of Mormon guys go on their mission. And, you know, he's gone for a long time. And beforehand, he has to break ties with Bella so that he can, like, you know, whatever, stay true to his mission and not harm her or whatever.
And he's not in touch with his family.
And Jacob swoops in and is trying to tempt her away from her like devotion to Edward, but she's like, no, no, I will wait for my missionary. Do I think that was intended? No. Do I think it's kind of low-key his mission? Yeah. Also, I read that Stephanie Meyer knew her husband since she was a young girl, so it's likely that there was some kind of like, he's on his mission. I am waiting for him.
I wonder where he went on his mission.
I wonder too. And they only dated for 4 months before they got married, which is very typical in Mormonism and very reflective of like the plot of the Twilight Saga. Like, there is not a lot of time that elapses from when Bella and Edward meet to when she's like, I'm ready to die for him. I'm ready to marry him. I'm pregnant with his baby. Sorry, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But like, things are moving fast.
It's only a couple years from cover to cover, all the books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's insane. Yeah, yeah, she moves at the speed of Mormonism.
Yeah,
for
she
sure.
She moves at the speed of Mormonism. I read an actually, I thought, interesting article about Mormonism and Twilight. It's written by Jana Reese. It was published in BYU Studies Quarterly. It's called Book of Mormon Stories That Steph Meyer Tells to Me, LDS Themes in the Twilight Saga and the Host. And she's like making the case for these Mormon themes in Twilight. And one that she talks about is kind of like agency and accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Which are very Mormon concepts. I mean, they're concepts beyond Mormonism, but Mormons are obsessed with them.
Yeah.
And like this idea that we're free to act and not be acted upon, that's from the Book of Mormon,
mm-hmm.
That idea. So like Edward and the Cullens being vampires, but choosing to be vegetarians is very like, oh, we're rising above right. our baser instincts. She also talks about like overcoming the natural man is a similar theme in the story. That's again a very Mormon idea. The natural man is an enemy to God and has been from the fall of Adam and will be forever and ever unless he yields to the enticings of the Holy Spirit. Holy shit, how do I still have that memorized?
Wow.
Anyway, doesn't matter. So that's like a thing that's definitely coming up here.
Mm-hmm.
There's also like Jacob can be a werewolf, but can choose to be like a good werewolf, right? Like he doesn't right. have to tear the Cullens apart. He can protect them.
Mm-hmm.
So there are these moments in the text where Bella is like, oh, come on, Jacob, you don't have to do this. You can rise above that instinct or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote like a darker application of this is like, I wonder if Meyer thinks that being gay but not acting on it is a similar kind of victory.
Mm.
Just because I think that's a thing that a lot of Mormons believe and have mm-hmm. believed, right? Like, even if you, the natural man, feels compelled to homosexuality, like, you can rise above it.
Mm-hmm.
like you don't have to give in to those urges, right? So there For sure. are like dark applications mm-hmm. of these ideas that I couldn't help kind of thinking about, mm-hmm. especially when I was watching New Moon. There's this scene where Charlie says to Bella, like, sometimes you have to learn to love what's good for you.
Mm.
And I was like, ugh.
Yeah. What a thing. Mormons love to deny themselves all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All sorts of things.
It's the name of the game.
I will say one other sort of Mormon thing I'm noticing is this kind of faux feminism, this kind of Mormon feminism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Stephenie Meyer thinks of herself, if not as a feminist, as like a women's empowerment agent, because that's how she talks about herself. There's a quote from an interview in The Guardian where she's like, I think there are many feminists who would say that I'm not a feminist, but to me, I love women. I have a lot of girlfriends. I admire them. They make so much sense to me. I feel like the world is a better place when women are in charge. So this very kind of superficial.
Yeah. Not actually talking about feminism.
Right. And then there's another quote from her own website where she's like responding to critics who are saying Bella is a terrible like mm-hmm. character for women and the Twilight books are anti-feminist. And she makes this kind of weird argument about like, she's like, the core of feminism is being able to choose. Here we are again with like agency, right? Mm-hmm. The core of feminism is being able to choose, she says. The core of anti-feminism is conversely telling a woman she can't do something solely because she's a woman. Okay. And so she's like, so why can't a woman choose to be a mom, be a stay-at-home mom? I mean, it's kind of her, or to choose her family over like herself, basically.
Yeah.
Which like, I mean, is that really what Bella chooses? I don't know. It seems like more like Stephenie Meyer's talking about herself there.
Right. It seems like she very quickly just starts talking about herself.
I don't know. It's just kind of a weird moment where I'm like, yeah, you want to like, because Mormons are like, women are the best. Women are like divine.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to put them over here on this pedestal where we say that we revere them and value them, but also like we don't really want to hear from them and they don't have any like real leadership or power. And but they're you know, free.
Right. But a woman is only one certain kind of woman to mm-hmm. them. It's not sure. women, it's the woman.
The Mormon woman. Yeah. Anyway. I just think that is informing for sure the characterization mm-hmm. of the women in these books. Like, inevitably, right?
For sure.
And it's going to show up more in the later books when Bella, like, gets pregnant and is like, this pregnancy is going to kill me, but I don't care. I want to give my life again.
Which is, like, your choice, but mm-hmm. that's the difficult thing. Like, it's like, well, sure, I understand what you're saying. She has these choices. She's making decisions that people might not agree with or might not make for themselves, but you're writing this book.
Yeah. And those kind of decisions don't get made into a vacuum. Like, what makes a young woman think it's better for me to die so that I can be with this man forever? And like abandon my own parents, my friends, my life, my hopes and dreams for the future for this man.
Yeah.
Where do you think that idea comes from? It doesn't right. come from nowhere.
No, only a Mormon could think it was like a good idea to live eternally with one man. Like, please, you know, love my husband. Gosh. Eternity. Like, we'll circle back. Sure. Mm-hmm. Why you will always love him. Eternity?
I
300
mean,
years from now, like, I might be like, I really want to go to, you know, this other place. And he's like, I really want to go to that other place. And I'll be like, happy peace. Trails.
The thing is, when you're 17, those are big choices to make. And Bella's willing to make them almost immediately. I mean, after that scene in the woods where she's like, you're a vampire. She goes home and the very next lines she says are like, I'm irrevocably in love with him, right?
I'm irreversibly and irrevocably in love
yes,
with him.
Yes, give it a minute, sweetheart. Yeah. You're talking about forever here. slow down.
Yeah, are we 5 minutes into the relationship at that point too? Like, it's yes. so early.
Cautionary tale, my friends.
I didn't go over New Moon. We did also watch New Moon.
Yeah, we did also watch
New Moon. Man, these are just observations.
These are not necessarily Mormon things, but the scene in New Moon where she is sitting in her room and Possibility by Likely is playing and the seasons are passing, that scene is a cultural reset. I think of that scene twice a week.
It's beautiful. Chip and, was vibing. My 2-year-old was like invested.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, in the book, the way that's written, do you remember this?
How it's just like pages.
A chapter is just like fall, winter. Or no, it's like September,
October, November.
Ooh.
Chills. Yeah. That was me at 16.
That is beautiful. An emo breakup if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, that's serious. Take that girl to Chuck E. Cheese. Or something. Get her out of there.
Get her out of the house, Charlie.
The scene at the beginning of the movie where Edward is walking across the parking lot in slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's everything. Iconic. Scream every time. I remember seeing it in theaters.
Me too.
I'll never forget.
I think I saw a midnight showing.
Yeah, I think I did too.
People were freaking out and my heart was a flutter.
My heart exploded. So Jacob refers to his growth spurt in New Moon as him just filling out, like he's a grandma talking about her granddaughter, you know. Not good.
Cringe.
Didn't love that. Yeah, so Bella going to her birthday party at the Collins house, getting a paper cut, and then everybody almost killing her.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the catalyst for Edward deciding that he needs to leave. And he needs to like convince Bella he doesn't love her so that she'll move on or whatever, mm-hmm. which doesn't work. I wrote, it's giving, you make me horny, so we need to break up.
Yeah, which is such a real thing. Like, I feel like as an 18-year-old Mormon girl dating boys who were just about to go on their missions, this was such the vibe.
Yeah, like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
Let's put a pause on this.
There was a lot of really heartfelt hand-holding going on.
Yeah.
Because you got to be careful about crossing that line. He's got a mission to serve, which again is why I think New Moon is all about the mission.
I think you're right. Have we ever talked about Mormons and hand-holding on this podcast?
I don't know. What's there to talk about? Tell me.
What's there to talk about?
No, you're Lisa. Right. Immediately, I'm like, wait, I haven't been in Utah in a minute. When you're in Utah, freaking everybody in town is holding hands.
Yeah,
everybody's paired off. It's like if you drop your boyfriend's hand for a minute, you're worried some bitch is gonna swoop in and steal him from you.
It's over. I know, which makes me feel, I can't bring my husband to Utah because he's not a hand holder. And it'll make me feel really insecure.
Yeah. You guys will look out of place. Women will come up to him and see if he's marriageable.
They will. He's a babe. I know. And in church, it's even worse. The like back rubbing.
And think about that pre-marriage. Premarital back rubbing is like, it's the only like erotic touching they're allowed. And so it gets pretty heated.
Yeah. It's intimate. It's getting intimate in the chapel. Edward, for some reason, thinks it's a good idea to like take Bella out into the woods to drop this bomb on her that he's gonna leave, and it's gonna be like he was never there and she'll never see him again.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
And incredibly profoundly emotionally unstable Bella like falls to her knees and like loses consciousness in the woods and has to be recovered by like somebody in the search party. It's terrible.
Again, not sweet young love, like concerning obsession.
Yes. Yeah, if that was my daughter, I'd be like, we're moving.
But that is kind of what I mean. There is a certain like irrational angst to like thinking you're in love when you're a teenager.
Oh yeah,
where it's like world ending.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was a psychopath for my boyfriend when I was a teenager. Yeah.
And then you grow up and that and you learn some things, right? Yeah. But Bella is in it.
Oh, I put when Edward starts to appear to Bella when she gets in dangerous situations, mm-hmm. his little, she'll have like a little vision. And I was like, she's having visions.
Yeah.
Bella is straight up having visions. Edward is an angel. He's her guardian angel. He's being like, don't get on that motorcycle with that scary guy.
Yeah.
You know, don't jump off that cliff.
Very spooky.
Michael Sheen, who plays Arrow, the Volturi guy.
Give the man an Oscar. Like, probably the greatest performance of his career. And I think he's got a lot of great performances.
He's an incredible actor. But yeah. Yeah, that's tops. Crazy to think that the church got 10% of Steph's movie deal.
Wow, that's so interesting. I will say about that. So I was reading about how in 2008 and 2009, she was like the highest selling author in the world. And I saw somewhere quoted that she's like making like $50 million a year thereabouts from books and movies. Yeah, so the church getting 10% of that, that's wild. But also it made me think again about BYU and the English department there where she graduated. And like, I'm fascinated that there isn't, as far as I know, some kind of relationship there. Like, she hasn't like endowed a chair or a professorship or something at BYU with all that money.
That's interesting.
And I was at BYU in 2008, 2009, when she was at the height of all this, making all this money, being so famous and popular. And it was a thing that was like, the faculty were kind of like, ugh, like, we're too good for this. These mm-hmm. books are not literary enough. They're not elevated enough. It's not like she was a name that was being like proudly used to like recruit students or mm-hmm. like talk up the department. And I find that so fascinating and like so fucking preposterous that BYU is. They're like above.
I agree, but it makes sense. I mean, it was like a band, like those were banned books and they are kind of smutty. There's a lot of quivering and it's like,
but also they are fundamentally innocent books. And for sure. Like, she is the most famous person coming out of that department literally ever. And you think you're too good to like talk this up or be proud of this or like ever even really say her name. Like, I vaguely remember a couple of times her coming up in classes or in conversation and people just kind of being like, oh.
I think her time may come because I feel like there's definitely been a Twilight Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
In the past few years, people have been revisiting. And
well, Midnight Sun came out in 2020.
Yeah.
Which I loved. Did you ever read Midnight Sun?
No.
Midnight Sun is Twilight from Edward's perspective. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Also, Life and Death. That's been out longer, but that's a gender swapped retelling of Twilight. Ooh. And it is garbage.
Yeah.
And if you are like, I don't know, is Stephanie Meyer really driven by archaic views of gender? You should read that book. And all your questions will be answered.
I do have it.
You should read it. It's not good.
Maybe it's time.
And I say this as a true fan of the franchise. Like, it's barely mentioned on her Wikipedia and her website. I think it was just like a known flop of an attempt.
Because wasn't she going to put out Midnight Sun, pages leaked, or chapters even, and then she put out the other one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yikes. Fumble. Just not put out good. Midnight Sun. Goodness. Oof. But yeah, maybe as time goes on, some people will die out. Some people will retire. Some people will replace them. And we're getting the Meyer building.
Yeah, the Meyer building. In all the buildings at BYU are named after like church leaders. But then we'll have the Stephanie Meyer School of Literature or something.
We are going to watch the rest of the Twilight movies.
Yes.
And talk about them some more on next week's episode.
Continue our beautiful spooky season focus on Mormons and ghosts and monsters and vampires and whatnot. Until then, follow us everywhere, folks. Please bless everywhere. Pod. TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. Subscribe on YouTube, please, please, please. Don't just stream our videos, but follow and leave reviews and rate the podcast. It helps so much to have all of that coming in. And then, yeah, send us DMs or email us at pleaseblesspod@gmail.com with episode ideas, comments,
anything, observations, thoughts on Twilight, thoughts on Stephanie Meyer.
Yes, but no hate for Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson. We don't want to hear it.
We won't have it.
Because you're wrong.
Yeah, not in this house. Put some respect on their names.
Please bless Kristen Stewart, our beautiful Kristen Stewart. Please bless Robert Pattinson, and please bless this podcast.
Amen.